Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of Three Guys and a Data Model with
Sonia,
Chris,
Jacob,
and I'm Taylor. Today we're going to be talking about Interface Documentation Maturity Levels, also known as IDML. Chris, I understand that this was your concept. What need do you feel that IDML addresses?
We've been dealing with a lot of different models over the course of the last couple of years, and we found that there are a lot of different models that exist at varying levels of quality and capability. So, you know, in our industry, we're used to talking about things in terms of the technology readiness level, the TRL, or in software engineering, we have the capability maturity model, the CMM. So thinking along those lines, I was trying to come up with an idea for how we might be able to characterize models along a continuum, and this was the idea that came out of it. So we came up basically, this isn't a full, intended to be a full capture of the data model itself, but rather the documentation of interface. So, you know, we'll have to go back to some previous podcasts to really break down interface versus the data model itself. But this is really talking about the maturity of our interface documentation.
And for those that are listening, and you can't necessarily see, or you might be able to see on the website, but IDML model, it's basically a maturity model going from levels 1 through 7. And as Chris said, you said it's it was conceived of as being a kind of a spectrum, like a something. There aren't necessarily clear delineations between a 1 and a 2 or a 2 and a 3. But in general, as the data model becomes more complex and or larger, it requires a greater level of maturity from that's on that scale from 1 to 7. Would that be correct?
Well, I think as our interfaces have more complex documentation, we can at least express them along this continuum. And what we can do is we'll have our document or our diagram posted in the show notes, so that way you'll be able to refer to it there.
So these levels 1 through 7, what are the benefits of moving up this chain?
Right, so why are we bothering to document our interfaces in the first place, right? And the whole point is so we have more rigorous, machine leverageable interfaces. Now at the bottom levels, the 1 and 2, these are the levels that we've been operating in for decades. And largely ascribed to paper documentation or English-based texts, not necessarily something a computer can process and make effective use of. And as we move up the IDML hierarchy, the idea is that our models are documented more thoroughly and that they're able to be leveraged by a computer to facilitate integration with other computers. And again, taking the human out of the loop.
And in the defense of the first few levels that we were at for a few decades there, when your systems are not very complex, they don't require very complex documentation to support them. When you're putting together a stick and a rock you found to make a stone axe, the interface documentation isn't much more than the string that you use to tie them together. But when you're putting together an F-35 and an aircraft carrier, things need to be a little more complex and cover more ground.
And to that point, it's not always better necessarily to be moving up to higher maturity levels. It may be completely appropriate to remain at a mid-level or even at one of the earlier levels if you have something that's very simple.
It's not always appropriate, that's correct.
For a lot of the smart home stuff that we see, which is kind of where we're moving some of this stuff, those systems aren't overly complex yet, and so their IDMLs would be classed at 1, maybe level 2 for the vast majority of them. And for right now, that works fine. You can adjust your thermostat when you talk to your smart speaker. But as those systems grow in complexity, they'll need to up their documentation levels up to, you know, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, and just even though we're definitely going to post this online, if anybody's downloaded this and listening to it in the car or anyplace else like that, and you just don't have the visual, Jacob's talking about levels 1, which is source code. Level 2, which is ICDs and IDDs. 3 is electronic data definitions. 4 is interface-centric model. 5 is entity model with direct projections. 6 is an entity model with containment. And 7 is entity model with relationships. Is that where it ends?
Well, so before we go there, I think we need to tease out each one of these a little bit, because in order to not give the wrong idea of what we were talking about, we had to come up with some, I'd say, creative names for each one of these levels. It's not always clear, so I think we need to walk through those. Does it end, though, to your question, does it end with the relationships? I don't know that it does. And this is just, this is a very, you know, this is the first time we've really talked about this, that we're really shopping this idea around, we're introducing this to the community. And this might not be the final set of IDMLs. This is, you know, version 1.0. We would rather get something out there and in the discussion so we have a way to talk about these things, even if it isn't perfect yet. You know, we can iterate on this and make it better. Are models with relationships the best? Right now, we think that those are some of the best models that we're producing. We have actually gotten to a point at this level 7 where we've actually found more things that we need to do to make our models of higher quality, but that's just going to be further refinements on this level. I think this is a pretty good spectrum to start with. In the original draft document that we came up with, there were two more levels. And what we realized was that we had crossed over from talking about the interface documentation to talking about data model construction. So there's very likely a parallel structure that we need to talk about for data model construction, because there are other issues that we talk about in data model land that don't really apply to the interface documentation, even though they're tightly related.
Getting back to that interface documentation, then what is the earliest level? What are we talking about in terms of source code and ICDs and IDDs?
Okay, so the first level, I call that source code. So in one respect, you could say, well, there's no documentation at level 1. But on the other hand, the source code itself, it actually is documentation, and it just requires a lot of effort to read through it and to understand what it's saying. But it's really the truth. There's nothing more specific than the source code, because the software is going to do what the source code says it does.
It's pure.
Yeah, it's pure. It might be wrong.
But it's hard if whoever writes the source code wins the lottery and leaves tomorrow. It may not be well understood by somebody else coming in to replace that.
That's true. And I don't know how many times, Jacob, I mean, you've never read source code that has bugs in it, right?
No, not once.
No, I mean, it's always perfect.
There may be a time someday, but not yet.
It could happen. Right, and then if you're trying to reverse engineer source code and you run across a bug, not only are you trying to understand someone's proper logic and unwind what the heck they were thinking, now you're trying to understand why this either error exists or this logical fallacy that yield something. It's this big gaping hole. I see it because I thought about it. Jacob didn't see it when he coded it. More likely vice versa. But yeah, this is a form of documentation, and we think it's probably of the least useful.
It's not quite mind reading, but it's pretty close.
Okay. So from there we move to level 2, which is interface control documents, interface description documents. And from these formats, we're really talking about text-based documents, not electronic formats. I mean, sure, they might be in a portable document file, something like that, a Word doc, but they're not really designed to be in a machine-parsable format. And with this, this is very typical throughout the industry. We pass paper documents around and you know, we say, this is how you interface to my system, which is really cool, except that somebody hit the lottery, or they just retired, and the next engineer that comes along doesn't know if his margin notes are what were implemented, or if those were just suggestions, or what. So we do make notes in our documents.
With paper documents, it's very hard to know what exactly is canon for those documents. A lot of things can get added in along the way. You can just slip in a page here and there, and you're not sure that everyone's working off the same version. And add to that the fact that you have margin notes and things like that as well that really expound on the meaning of certain parts and make it actually legible, unlike the original document, but those don't make their way around everywhere.
And I think also, I mean, anybody who's worked, you know, in this field at all has certainly touched ICDs or IDDs. And although theoretically you can say, oh, well, version control, blah, 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 you know, et cetera, but the truth of the matter is that I think pretty much everybody's experienced the kind of problems that you guys are talking about.
Logically, the next level is, well, you take that nice paper document and you put it into a Word doc. and now you ship around the Word doc everywhere. And you add in a couple more things, and it makes it a little easier to keep the idea of what canon is for that specific thing and make sure that everyone's on the same version. You could, you know, host it at a website or something like that where people can go and download that specific version.
So we're looking at level 3 there. And this is what we're calling electronic data definition. Really, like Jacob said, it's a refinement of level 2, just to say, yes, we do have this in some sort of an electronic format that we can do something with. We're not really trying to drive semantics and syntax yet, but you know, this is an early step.
Mm-hmm. You can run programs against it to pull out different pieces of information that you want and things like that. It makes it a little easier.
Yeah, there's some extraction that you can work there. So the next step is the interface-centric model, and I noticed that that's the first time that the term model actually comes into play.
So I'll back up. Originally, we called this the message model. And the reason for that is we've actually been using this term around the office for a couple of years now called MESENTs, message entities. And the problem is that maybe the things at the edge aren't messages, they're some sort of other interface. So we softened the language to call it an interface-centric model, meaning the entire model is built around how you talk to the system. Now, how one talks to a system is largely dependent on the concept of the stuff you worry about. Are you worried about command and control? Are you worried about intelligence? Are you worried about other aspects of the data? If all you care about is one particular slice of the data, you're going to want to view the data differently than someone who cares about some orthogonal concept.
Or if you were trying to use the system for something that it was not originally designed to do, which of course we know that never happens.
Never happens.
Ever.
Right.
Well, and this really ties back to the last episode on the grocery store analogy. Our interfaces are the recipes that we use to look at our system, and someone's going to want to select their own recipe so they get their own view of the system. What happens in this model is we take our interface and we basically promote the interfaces directly into a model.
Right.
And there's this one-for-one correlation to everything. So if I have a position in my interface, I have a position in my model. If I have a speed in my interface, I have a speed in the model, and they're both tied to the same view. Now, that's great, that works fantastic, until you bring in someone else's interface.
Yeah.
And then, now Sonia is talking about a position and a speed, and we have to create two new positions and speeds, or a new position and a new speed for her view. And then Taylor does the same thing, and Jacob does the same thing. So now, amidst the four of us, we have four positions and four speeds. Well, it turns out that Sonia and Taylor are talking about the same thing, and Jacob and I are talking about the same thing. But we have four different representations of this in our data model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we look purely at the interface rather than what the data is referring to or what we're talking about. So the interface model tends to be very monolithic and straight up and down.
Yeah. And it's also redundant. You know,
it can be redundant.
It can be more prone to error in that way.
But not very extensible.
Yeah, not at all extensible. Yeah. And not traceable.
And not very well traceable at all. So really, when we move to level 5, this is really our first real data model with robust documentation. And here we talk about an entity model with direct projection. And what does that mean? So instead of modeling messages or interfaces, we've actually started modeling entities. These are analogs to the real world, or analogs to what we call our domain, right? The stuff we talk about. And then the direct projections just means that we aren't writing extremely detailed documentation, but it's enough to identify that this is the temperature of the coffee, or it's the temperature of the engine, or it's the speed of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which is a big step up from units and a number.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
And I guess it's important to mention that in our electronic data definition back at level 3, oftentimes that captures syntax for us. So it does help us capture things like units and just the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But unless that's managed centrally, we get a lot of errors in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things evolve over time. We go from the paper document, or the management of the paper document, we put it into an electronic format, and then you know, why is it that all these things don't line up? Or why is it that sometimes we represent meters with a capital M, and sometimes meters is just meter, and sometimes it's the UK spelling, and sometimes it's the US spelling, and these are real errors that we come across, especially when we're looking at NATO documents that are managed by multiple nations. So we're trying to get away from those errors with more formalism, and that's what we're going toward in higher levels of our model, is more formalism.
Then after that, we get to level 6, which is kind of, we have the temperature of the coffee, but now we have 2 cups of coffee. So which temperature of which coffee mug am I talking about? And so that's when we kind of get into, well, this is the coffee mug that Chris is holding, and Chris is sitting in the conference room, and the conference room is at Scale National Headquarters. And so you get a projection path so that you know precisely which thing you're talking about in the overall world of your system. So this isn't one level deep, this is, you know, many levels deep, and you really are able to drill down and get a high degree of specificity of the specific thing that you're talking about.
And context, too. Basically, it can provide additional context to the data and to the messages.
Right. With more complex projection paths, you can start to capture different semantic behaviors. Not necessarily behaviors, but...
That's coming.
Yeah, things like that.
One of the things that I think is really neat about using the deeper levels of containment and longer projection paths is that you only have to document it to the level of detail that you need. So if I have a sensor that worries about the level of the fuel in the fuel tank, it may not be necessary to talk about the level of the fuel of the fuel tank in the wing of the aircraft, right? We just want to talk about the level of the fuel. That allows us to translate that data to other applications, like you said, Jacob. Or maybe I have some portable device that's a test device for engines, right? Well, sometimes engines are in an aircraft, sometimes they're in a car. Ostensibly, they're different engines, and sometimes they're on a test stand at the depot for us to just run tests on. So if we've over-documented our engine, then we may have eliminated the ability to quickly integrate our handheld device with the engine when it's on a test stand versus when it's on the vehicle. Now, that said, it doesn't eliminate the ability to integrate these things. It just reduces the ability to automate that. It still requires a human to go in and explore those relationships.
Well, the last level that we have documented here in this kind of 1.0 version of the IDML is entity models with relationships. And this is where we are both using containment and also tracing through related contexts.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about this in papers and podcasts in the past. There are things that are always relationships and things that are sometimes relationships. Maybe things have temporal relationships. Their life cycles, as it were, are not tied together forever. So the engine, is the engine a part of the car always and forever? Or is it installed in the car for a time? And then it gets taken out, it gets worked on, maybe a different engine goes in the car, or maybe the same engine goes back in the car. These kinds of relationships are an aspect of modeling. One of the reasons that I broke that out as a separate level of maturity was largely because of how the technology developed. Mm-hmm. Our first pass through the technology, we really didn't have this ability to have associations, which are just relationships, and they are details on the relationships between things. As the technology has matured and we've developed the ability to express associations, we've found that we use them far more. Now, you can over-engineer a model with relationships, just like you can do, and we can over-engineer any one of these levels, but this is certainly, it gives you more tools to build a more expressive model. And these relationships are still machine parsable and machine understandable.
And I think this is, Chris, what you originally came up with and what we've sort of developed into this kind of 1.0 version that we're putting out there for people for sort of public consumption, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the idea is, like what you were saying before, it's a framework for people to begin to have additional conversations, to be able to give, even though it is on a continuum, to kind of give sort of a benchmark. Yeah, well, we're about, we're somewhere between a 3 and a 4, and our goal is, you know, to get next year to a 5 and the year beyond that to get to a 6.
Right.
And these are the reasons why. This is why we think that it will actually, you know, benefit us, because this is the direction that our, you know, that our architecture is taking, or that our, you know, our projects are taking. So.
Yep. Good point.
It's a good foothold.
And if we find that there's some utility, you know, if the community does at some point adopt this as a good metric for talking about models, then it possibly gives our customers a good way to talk about these models in contractual language, and even the kinds of models that they expect to be developed. So that way we move away from, well, I'm just putting a data model under contract.
What does that mean?
And I don't really know what I'm going to get.
Right. I don't know what I'm going to get. I don't necessarily know what the benefits are of this particular, you know, of what it is that I'm getting, and whether or not it's appropriate. Just because it's, you know, just because it's a level 7 doesn't mean it's what's best for us at this time. Right.
I may end up with a fully fledged level 7 for something where I need my smartphone to communicate with, you know, my thermostat. And then I may end up with a PowerPoint slide with boxes and arrows for my F-35 landing on my aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Which.
Now, the one thing I do want to note here, though, is that if you are a, you know, if you're an organization operating at, let's say, a level 4, and you want to be able to interface with another program that's operating at, say, a level 5, that's a problem, isn't it?
I think that we're going to have more difficulty interoperating between levels that are 2 away from each other once we get up from 3. There's some mapping we can do 3 to 4, some 4 to 5, and obviously 5, 6, and 7s are pretty well compatible with one another. But we are starting to move away from compatibility as we go up the spectrum.
But I think in general, it's not so much I'm sorry that there's going to be a problem with the integration, as you, if you connect a 4 and a 5, you're basically going to be operating at a level 4 in terms of those integrations for the most part.
Right. You're not going to gain as much benefit from your integration or from your data model.
Right.
Documentation.
Yeah.
Now, that said, like Jacob said, anytime you've taken and pulled your information together, and you've started rigorously documenting it, you've moved the needle forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've moved the ball down the field, and you're in a better position than you were before. So we can actually take a level 4, promote it to a level 5 relatively easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
And we've done that with a number of different data models or interface sets. Mm-hmm. And
so that might be another reason to move up if you want to be able to operate with others that are already at that next level.
Yeah. And a 5 can work with a 7. It takes a little bit more human in the loop, but it's not a problem.
All right, you guys, I think that's a wrap. If you want more information, please visit our website at scale.com. That's SKAYL. And keep an eye out for episode 6. Thanks for listening.